In 2 Corinthians chapter 10, the Apostle Paul reminds us the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty in God to the pulling down of strongholds, casting down arguments, and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. Apologetics Profile podcasts are designed to equip you with the resources and tools for engaging the ideas of other religions, worldviews, and cults that challenge your faith. Every Monday, a new conversation to help encourage and exhort you to engage with your non-Christian neighbors in conversation about the truth of the gospel.
Sociologist Dr. Sherry Turkle notes in her 2011 book, Alone Together, Why We Expect More from Technology and Less from Each Other, that our social media technologies have profoundly influenced our self-identities. Quote, "The self, shaped in a world of rapid response, measures success by calls made, emails answered, text replied to, contacts reached. This self is calibrated on the basis of what technology proposes, by what it makes easy. But in the technology-induced pressure for volume and velocity, we confront a paradox. We insist that our world is increasingly complex, yet we have created a communications culture that has decreased the time available for us to sit and think uninterrupted. As we communicate in ways that ask for almost instantaneous responses, we don't allow sufficient space to consider complicated problems." End quote. If you have ever spent time on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or many of the other social media platforms on the internet today, you understand what Dr. Turkle suggests here. We pose questions to people, exchange ideas, send text message, oftentimes about topics that for centuries have required sustained contemplative thought. But in our technological age, our patience has nearly evaporated as we demand instantaneous responses. And we also forget that we are engaging other human beings who, like ourselves, have a multitude of pressing concerns outside their social media personas. It becomes increasingly easier to set aside thoughtful, considerate dialogue and consideration for the other person in exchange for instantaneous posts and responses, and in such instances, the discourse can quickly turn vitriolic and personal, especially if you see the other person as an object. As believers, how best should we interact with such technologies? How do we wisely negotiate the perils of social media and not fall prey to dehumanizing ourselves and our interlocutors? On part two of our conversation with Dr. Sarah Salviander, who is actively engaged in online ministry to skeptics and seekers, Sarah shares with us wisdom from her years of engaging people on the internet. As it turns out, her sage advice sounds a lot like the things Jesus taught us to do. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Consider the planks in our own eyes before focusing on the specks in our brethren's eyes. Love your enemies and be kind to those who revile you. But of course, none of us do those things perfectly. Without Jesus, we can do nothing. We need his mercy so that we in turn can be merciful to others. So if you are online a lot or have children or grandchildren who spend time on social media, you don't want to miss this special episode. As we begin part two, we discuss how the anonymity online impacts how we engage others. The anonymity on social media, and what I mean by anonymity is you're not in person with somebody, it really does impact the way you engage people. I would say I'm probably close to the same person I am in person. I'm probably a little bit more outspoken on my Twitter, but I'm generally the same person in person that I am online. And I think Sarah, having met me, could probably vouch for that. If not, you can tell me. But that's the thing. You ask, stop and ask yourself before you make a post. Would I really say this to a person in person? Can I back this up? Mm-hmm. Can I substantiate what I'm saying? Would I say this with kindness and compassion to the people that I know in person? So Brady, you know, of course, we have the advantage of the Atheist and Christian Book Club that we've been doing for years.
Yes.
Where I used to cook dinner for everybody, which is wonderful. We used to meet in the office and now we meet on Zoom and it's still really good. But that really helps you. And I tell skeptics who attack me, I say, look, come join the book club and come tell everybody what you think of me on the book club, you know, and few people have taken me up on that, but all of this combined is really, you know, finally, this is all about Christ and our and who Jesus is. And I really want to try to social media and Twitter and my interactions have really helped me to develop a sense of self-awareness as to how I come across. Occasionally I'll post something and I'll ask people if I came across rudely or I'll have a conversation with a skeptic and make sure that I'm not being personal. Mm-hmm. And it's hard because if you're trying to be nice on Twitter, people can interpret it as condescension.
Yeah.
If I do an emoji with a thumbs up, I'm genuinely serious. If I wave at somebody with a smiley, I'm genuinely serious. But some people take that as condescension or sarcasm or snark. And I always have to kind of go out of my way to make sure that people know that I'm not doing that. And so I have a few skeptics that appreciate my interactions. And if I'm out of line, I think somebody would tell me. Mm-hmm. So I think Sarah's right that people are watching and you never know. And, you know, patience, perseverance, humility, kindness, gentleness, respect, all of that goes a long way, even when you're not face to face with somebody.
It is hard. It is hard doing or really just sharing your faith online. I am not a real gregarious person, but I'm semi-gregarious, I guess. but probably more gregarious than you, Dan. And Sarah, I just don't know you. So I don't know. I don't know how you are. You're not. But I know it can just be draining for me to get involved in these conversations. And it just has this way of just sucking you in and taking your time. And this may not be the best platform for everybody to be on, because sometimes, and this applies to Christians as much as it does people from any other faith system, or maybe those who would say no faith system, I might would push back on that, but this whole concept of, I know we affectionately refer to this as Twitter muscle, you know, where, you know, you have a certain anonymity online, and sometimes that can give you a confidence to maybe say and do things that you wouldn't do if the person was right in front of you. And I think that's a good thing for us is, okay, would I say this and would I say it like that if the person was standing right in front of me? And that really leads me to another question I'd like to ask you guys is if y'all could just kind of identify some pitfalls that we as Christians may make when we're engaging those of a different faith system or atheist, agnostics, you know, stuff like, and here's an example, when maybe we don't define words in the same way, or we don't stop and take the time to make sure that that we understand what they mean by what they say, or like, I mean, the term atheist, I think, is a prime example. And does this mean that you believe in no God whatsoever, or that there probably isn't a God? Daniel, could you speak a little bit to that? Then I'd like to hear what Sarah has to say.
Yeah, I think for me, there's a couple of things. I mean, having the benefit of knowing atheists in person, we have mutual atheist friends. There's a wide-ranging variety of discussions you'll find on social media where atheists will be discussing how to define atheism. Are you atheist and agnostic? Agnostic atheist? Do you believe there is no God? Do you believe there's God is not likely? Do you define your atheism as a lack of belief? Now, we as Christians may think that is a superfluous discussion, or come on, get over it. Atheism means this or that. But I think whatever your perspective is, I think the key there is listening to the individual with whom you are speaking, and
that's good.
Allow yourself to give them the benefit of the doubt and allow them to define how they see it and go from there without coming down on them with a hammer about what you think the definition of atheism ought to be. I mean, this is, you know, we affirmed in our podcasts about street epistemology. I think this is one aspect of street epistemology with which I can totally agree. In a conversation, allow the other person to use their definitions and empathetically listen to how they're using that.
Yes.
Now, where we would differ, of course, would be in the intent of what a street epistemology is after. But in our conversation, of course, having people to see Christianity in maybe a different light, I think it's important that we listen to the person. Again, this gets back to what Sarah said about discernment. And so I think it's we need to be careful in not making overgeneralizations about how an atheist would define their atheism. And I'll let Sarah speak to something else.
Dan, that's great stuff. And that reminds me that I need to be more patient and empathetic in that regard. And absolutely, I am very imperfect at doing these things that I think that we should do, the way that we should engage people, because I've lost my patience. I've been mildly insulting at times. So this is, you know, I don't want to give the impression that I'm doing this, you know, perfectly or even very well, but it's just a standard to shoot for.
And same here, because I'm the same. I'm the same problematic, you know, individual sometimes, but
well, you know, we're all human and we slip, and you know, and I've occasionally, and you know, or you're having a bad morning. I've had that happen.
Yeah.
Bad morning. Exactly. And I kind of take it out on somebody, and then boy, I feel bad. But you know, exactly. So these are things to aspire to, not things that I claim to be perfect at. Listening more than you speak is always a good thing for Christians when we're engaging anybody, really, but especially with non-believers or people from other traditions. One thing that I struggled with when I was in the process of converting and when I was a new Christian is getting past this barrier of, I don't know how to put it, Christian lingo, mm-hmm. the way that people talking about my walk with Jesus, my walk with God, talking about grace, a lot of that kind of thing. And at the time, being so new to all this, I didn't know what that meant. And I think Christians are so used to using this kind of language, and especially if they've been raised in the faith, that they don't even think about the fact that a lot of people don't know exactly what this refers to, or think about the word faith and how often that is misunderstood. You know, the person you're speaking with is going to have one idea of what that word means, and you're speaking from a completely different definition. And so that can be a really difficult thing. But, you know, Dan, I got to thank you for mentioning that, because it's just a good reminder to listen more and to really try to understand the perspective of the person that you're talking to, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. in order to make your point.
Because a lot of the war I see on Twitter, especially with this lately, with the popularity of street epistemology we talked about, the definition of faith. How does an atheist define faith? Well, Peter Boghossian says faith is belief without evidence. And so there's a lot of atheists and skeptics who will come at us with this idea that faith is just belief without evidence. And we don't like that, because no. that's yeah. not how we define faith. Mm-hmm. And so we can return the courtesy and say, okay, I'm not going to generalize about how you define atheism. I'm not going to overgeneralize about, oh, you're an atheist, so you must love Richard Dawkins or something like that. You know, even Bill in our book club, you know, we're going to do the Dawkins book, I think. We've talked about it anyway, but Bill, who is an atheist, he's like, we need to sort of shed our Dawkins heritage. So there's not every atheist embraces Richard Dawkins or Dan Dennett or whatever. They're individuals like we are. And so yeah, they don't believe in God, but I think if we grant that opportunity, now I'm speaking to myself as well, because I don't listen sometimes. I just want to be right. I mean, I'll admit it, because I don't like to be made a fool of publicly. So I try to return the sauce as civilly as I can. And that's the other thing too, that both atheists and Christians, I think we can get very pedantic about our terms and definitions, and almost to the point of posturing to where we want to make other people think that we're an expert, a subject matter expert in such things. And there's a difference between being knowledgeable about your subject matter, which I think is fine. You don't have to be a scientist to be knowledgeable about things. But I think on the other hand, too, let's not disparage one another because we don't have doctorate degrees or we're not accomplished physicists or PhD mm-hmm. molecular biologists. Because a lot of objections I get, because people find out I'm in a book with scientists or whatever, You don't know anything about science. You're a layman. What are your credentials? I was just asked today what my background was with evolution. I was in a long discussion about evolution with somebody. And I'm reading Stephen C. Meyer's book, new book, The God Hypothesis. And I've derived a lot of wonderful information from that. I'm fairly conversant with basic structural ideas in evolution. And so I was engaged with this conversation with an individual who was basically trying to tell me I was wrong. And, you know, I get a little chuffed, if you will. I'm like, ugh, you know, but then I have to sort of balance that and say, look, I understand the mechanisms. I understand this. I understand that. And sometimes when I explain myself to this degree, then that idea of credentials comes up, or what's your background, or how do you know this, or who are you? But sort of a lack of self-awareness on the part of the other individual, to where I don't try to shoot back and I say, well, what's your credentials? Well, who are you? Yeah. I just try to stay knowledgeable and stay on the subject. So there's a lot of what we would call ad hominem rhetoric that goes back and forth. I mean, Christians and atheists do this. We psychologically evaluate one another. We get personal with one another. There's a lot of that goes on that shouldn't. And I try to, in my discussions, stay on the topic at hand. And if people want to think I'm bloviating or sidetracking things or offering red herrings, that's fine. But I will try to be civil and stick with the conversation and share as much knowledge as I can, but also admitting my limitations. So many of us do this. We all do it. I'll get off here and I'll get on Twitter and I'll be tempted to win an argument. Mm-hmm. The temptation is there all the time. But if we're there with long-term seed planting and mutual respect and empathetic listening, I think it can go a lot farther than trying to make somebody look foolish. Because if they're trying to make you look foolish, the last thing I try not to do is I don't want to turn around and do that to them, but I have. I've tried and it's not good. It never works out.
That sounds really good, because what I'm hearing you say is that an act of humility really does go a long way, especially if your interlocutor is willing to have an honest conversation, that they're going to look at that and say, hey, you know, I realize that they're not, you know, they're telling me, hey, this is what I believe. I realize that I could be wrong on it, but I had taken some time to look into it. And this is just where I'm at right now. And it kind of sends the message to them of, hey, if you got something better, I'm happy to hear it. But also at the same time, I'm trying not to act like I'm, you know, everything.
I was thinking of an example, again, of Hugh Ross, who's wonderfully gentle in his conversations. And I've seen him in debates and in conversations with people who disagree with him. And sometimes these people will get quite insulting and they'll get a little hot. And he never responds in kind. He always responds with sincerity. And I've noticed people, you know, even people who don't agree with his intellectual position will say, well, you know, he definitely is somebody that they would want to listen to just because of the way that he responded in those situations, by not, not taking the bait, by staying calm, by not getting insulting and just sticking to the topic. But that credentialism that Dan talked about, boy, that drives me nuts. You know, as somebody with credentials, I don't think I have ever asked somebody what their credentials are, unless it was absolutely relevant to the conversation, unless that was actually the topic. Because to me, either you know the topic or you don't. It doesn't matter if you have a certificate that says that you're an expert in this. And so this is one of those things that I think, people try to shut down the conversation with those. But at least that's not something I experience very often. People, you know, asking what my credentials are. But what's kind of funny is that I do sometimes get people saying, you know, that I should have my PhD revoked, or, you know, just because I believe in God and Jesus, or, you know, just, in, you know, insulting things like that. But I just find that very amusing.
Yeah, boy, that's some seriously problematic talk there. Well, especially if, I mean, again, it's kind of like, okay, well, let's try that logic out for just a moment. Let's give it a test drive and see how it works. Okay, so you have no training in the Bible, Mr. Interlocutor, and so you're going to tell me all about the Bible. Okay, all right.
Good point. Anyway.
All right, this leads me to another question, because, we're talking about, okay, just because we may not be an expert in a particular subject area does not or should not prevent us from talking about a particular subject area. Do y'all guys have some ideas or suggestions on maybe areas that we should not engage in as we're witnessing online?
I try not to speak about things that I am insufficiently prepared to talk about. So I'll have people try to engage me on very subtle sort of things about biology, for instance, and I'm not prepared to engage on that because that is not in my intellectual wheelhouse. I'm not well versed in some of these areas. So I'll just avoid it, and I'll either defer to a colleague who specializes in that, or just say, I'm sorry, I don't know, I can't talk about that. I think it behooves Christians to not talk authoritatively about things that they don't actually know, because then I think you can kind of sell reputation and the reputation of Christians in general by doing that. Dan, do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I love the topic of evolution. It's not something I've written on extensively, but because of my, I mean, I've been engaging skeptics online ever since I got into apologetics years ago. I was on the Richard Dawkins website when it got started. I would go in and I was the classic troll where I'd go in and pretend to just be asking questions. And so I've matured in my attempts. I don't go on Twitter looking for trouble. But I love evolution and biology and those kinds of discussions. I am not an expert, but because so many people have hurled papers at me and books, and you don't understand this mechanism and you don't understand this mechanism, I dig into the subject as far as I can understand it and try to be conversant with people. Now, I'm also not an expert though. And so yes, what Sarah's saying is talk as much as you want about what you're confident in talking about. Can you back up what you're saying? And I think that's absolutely critically important. Ask yourself before you make authoritative pronouncements about this or that, can I back this up? Do I have resources? Do I know what I'm talking about? Again, you don't have to be a credentialed doctorate in any particular field, but are you knowledgeable on the subject enough to talk about it? I've read widely the popular literature on cosmology and astronomy for my master's thesis. I'm conversant with cosmology and astronomy and the big arguments on a popular level. I could not crunch the numbers that Sarah crunches. I don't get into the mathematics, but I'm more conversant and much more comfortable with the philosophy of astronomy and cosmology, mm-hmm. and the implications, theistic implications of it. But yes, absolutely know your limits and know your subject. If you love the Bible and if your favorite book of the Bible is the Psalms, great. Talk about the Psalms. But if you're talking about how yeast can mutate and repair itself genetically, and you have no idea about the popular literature on this, I got into a discussion with an actual credentialed biologist on this topic, and I got in a little over my head. I was able to follow him so far, but when he started ridiculing me, I started to pretend I knew more than I did. And that can be problematic. But you just, at some point, you have to say, I don't know. I'm not a subject matter expert, and I can't answer every question that you pose to me. But I think that's a very real temptation when we are confronted with skeptics who we can pretty much discern are making fun of us. We want to show that their mockery is unjustified. And so that's kind of a pride thing, rather than saying we don't know. Because if I say I don't know, it feels like a concession that gives them a victory. Right. And so here we are in this sort of mentality of winning and losing a discussion. And we think that saying I don't know is somehow going to concede a loss, being unable to return the serve of Fedorov or something, or you know what I mean? You want to be able to volley with the professionals, but sometimes we just have to put down our racket and say, I don't know. And that's okay. And that's absolutely essential to maintaining a civil interaction with our skeptic friends.
One of the questions that is always on my mind, and I always struggle to try to determine this, is and you mentioned this, Daniel, at the very beginning of our conversation, is when do we draw that line? How do we determine when a conversation has gone as far as, I mean, sometimes these conversations just die a natural death, and that's always good when that happens. And, you know, both parties are content with, I guess, what has gone on to whatever level. But how do we know, or what's a good way to determine when, okay, this conversation needs to be ended?
For me, obviously, it's when somebody just gets gratuitously insulting, and it's like, you know, I wish you well, but we're done here. When you sense that the conversation is not headed in any direction, that this person is never going to concede any point that you make, is determined to not take in anything, is kind of unteachable. And when I get to that point, I throw my hands up and admit, this is my limitation. I just can't do this. And I'll politely bow out of the conversation.
Very good. Dan, what do you do?
Know your limits. Have those in place. And then, as Sarah said, I think for me, if it gets personal, I'm done. All right, have a nice day. The other one I think for me is being able to let that person have the last word. That is absolutely probably the most difficult thing to do, is to end the conversation and say, thank you for your exchange. Thank you for your time. I'm going to end it here. And then the follow-up comments from them. Oh, look, he doesn't have anything to say. Oh, look, I won. Oh, look, he has no response. Oh, look, he runs away. I have a lot of skeptics who will say that if I end a conversation. It's not a concession of defeat. It's not that I don't have anything to say. It's really more, okay, we've had our say. This is unproductive. I can't spend any more time with this. I don't want to spend any more time with this. Have a nice day. And I'll put a little smile and a wave, and I'm not being condescending. But that is it. Are you able to give the person the last word, to walk away from a conversation, to say, I don't know, and to know your limits? If you just go in blindly and you don't know your limits, the emotional charge that you're going to get when you get berailed by a thread of skeptics is kind of an endorphin high, or it can depress you, or it can anger you or frustrate you very easily. If you're triggered easily, I don't recommend Twitter or social media. it's not good. And it really does take patience, time, humility, practice. You can't just come on Twitter and just say stuff and quote Bible verses and think everybody's going to bow down to you, because mm-hmm. the mockery will come. And when the mockery comes, it hurts, it stings, and it can be triggered. You have to know your personality. You have to know your limits.
There's one particular Facebook room group that I'm in a part of, and I say a part of, I don't interact very often, but there's one particular Taoist that, like, I'm his favorite, maybe the only evangelical Christian that he cares for, and he's got his reasons, and some of them I think are some unfounded fears. Others, though, I think that he might have some grounds of why he may dislike us, but even through that interaction, I mean, you know, he's said in conversations with other people, hey, this is a guy I respect. Now, we're in totally different worldviews. I mean, he's in a pantheistic worldview, I'm in a monotheistic worldview, but yet we've been able to demonstrate civility in conversation. And I think that it's a good example that, that when I say we, I don't mean just Christians. I mean, those in whom we are having these conversations with, whether they're atheist, agnostic, or whoever, we can demonstrate. In fact, I know with an atheist friend of mine, we were just complimented by somebody the other day because he and I were going back and forth on a particular Bible issue. And of course, we've known each other for quite some time. So we maybe go out of the way sometimes in written word to make sure that that is what I meant. Or no, wait, hold on. You might could have taken it like that. And the person jumps on and says, I have nothing to add, but I appreciate your civility with one another. And it's like, well, we're friends having a friendly conversation, even though we completely disagree. Guys, I want to thank you so much for engaging in this conversation today and helping those of us who find ourselves in these conversations. And sometimes they don't go well. Hopefully this has been something that's helpful for all of us to be able to maybe clean up our game a little bit online and be better defenders of the faith as we engage with those on various social media platforms. So, Daniel, as always, thank you so much for coming on and helping me out with this. And Sarah, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure.
It's a pleasure to get to, I know this isn't in person, but as close to in person, I guess, as it'll be for now. But it's been a pleasure to get to meet with you. One last chance, because I know we're about out of time. Any final words that any of y'all guys want to say before I sign off?
Yeah, a couple of things. The first is to never overstate your case. State things to the best of your knowledge, but within the limits of what we know. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, really, and this is more for Christians because atheists are already very good at this, which is to not always be on the defensive, but to go on the offensive. That doesn't mean to be offensive, but to be the person who is pressing the point, who's asking questions, and to not let somebody kind of squirm out of it. But you know, you can do this in a very polite, gentle, but firm way, which is to ask them questions. Well, what's your worldview? What is the evidence for your worldview? What is the evidence? On what basis do you believe the things that you believe? How do you fit it all together? What do you have something that comprehensively explains all of the things that you believe? And I'd be really interested to hear that. And for Christians to be pretty insistent on that, I would say to more often to ask questions and to persist than rather just to get up against the ropes and kind of get beaten up like we tend to on social media.
And what would you say, Sarah, to our atheist friends? What would be some advice, that sincere advice that you would give to people that sort of accost you with mocking and stuff like that?
To not always assume that we're trying to present an argument. Sometimes we just state things. To not always assume that we're trying to browbeat them into accepting a certain point of view. And also the what we talked about earlier about being good listeners. Because so often when I'm speaking with a non-believer, they're not really listening for the point that I'm trying to make or the argument I'm trying to make or to try to understand the definitions of the words I'm using. To really, instead of trying to get locked into that dance, you know, like you do your move and I'll do my move. But instead, what is it I'm really trying to say? To try to understand that and to engage that instead of trying to work it into this really formulaic sort of thing. Because I think it'd be so much more fun, so much more interesting to actually engage what the other person is believing and is talking about, rather than this sort of meme level thing that a lot of them want to argue against.
Right. And that requires a foundation of trust. If you can establish, you can give a person a reason to trust you.
Yeah.
I think you can have a much more productive dialogue with people that you know aren't going to turn around and retweet your stuff to mock you.
Yeah.
That really does lend itself well to these kinds of conversations, productively anyway.
Well, guys, thank you so much for being a part today. I want to thank Sarah for being on with us. Daniel, always good to have you with me. And on behalf of these two fine Christian folks, I want to thank you for listening to Apologetics Profile. And we look forward to being with you again next week. On behalf of Apologetics Profile, I'm Brady Blevins, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, Brady. We hope we have given you good things to think about regarding interacting online with others, believers and unbelievers alike. If you have children or grandchildren, friends or family who are on social media often, we encourage you to share these episodes with them. And we also encourage you to come and see us practicing online civility with our skeptic friends through our monthly Atheist and Christian Book Club. It's a monthly gathering online of skeptics and believers talking about topics that are important to both sides of the issue. And we do so with civility and kindness toward one another. Visit atheistchristianbookclub.com, atheistchristianbookclub.com, for more information about how you can join us for free. Thanks again for listening, and for Apologetics Profile and Watchman Fellowship, I am Staff Apologist Daniel Ray.